Hey.
Welcome to this version of America Tonight. You heard the song that so many of us know so well. That's right, Saturday Night Fever. The one of the voices of the Bee Gees, Robin Gibbs, is dead, rather, at the age of 63 years old. He was fighting a long-time battle with cancer, with colon and liver cancer. So 62. He succumbed to it. It looked like he had made a great turn a couple of months ago, and unfortunately not enough to fight this thing. He's a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, and many of you know The Voice. So this is where we begin. It's some of the tunes that you probably would have listened to on the radio, maybe some of you anyway, as you were cruising down the road somewhere. Perhaps others of you were busy watching a little horse race called the Preakness, the second leg of the Triple Crown. I'll have another wins the second leg. How about that? We didn't have any winners from our trifecta challenge. Too bad. A couple of you thought maybe you would nail it, but nobody nailed it because you had to have all three, and nobody had all three. So it comes down to Bodie Meister, and I'll have another. And again, Bodie Meister loses by just a teeny bit, but enough for I'll have another, who has a shot at winning the Triple Crown if the horse can win Belmont, which is a much longer distance. Also, over the weekend, there was a lot of conversation about the NATO summit. And the reason there was so much conversation about the NATO summit is because the cops were clashing with the kids that were there, mostly kids, I'm going to say, that were there, fighting and screaming and yelling and everything else. They made 45 arrests. It kind of looked worse maybe than it was on the ground. Because, you know, it's just such a big photo op once somebody goes crazy and they start to curse and spit and, you know, a lot of nutty things were happening. And I think it'll probably get a lot worse before it gets better. So it was a tough weekend for the Chicago cops. You have to assume that, boy, they were working some long hours, and it's probably going to be a very long couple of days for the cops in the Windy City, because I can only imagine the protesters were marching through Chicago to the summit, and this doesn't die down. It doesn't die down once it starts. There'll be people screaming about all kinds of things that are wrong in the world, and what's going on, and, you know, the 99% or still would make a big presence, and that would be part of what would be yelled out, I think, in the crowds and over the megaphones and all that kind of stuff. Also, if you weren't paying attention over the weekend, sadly, there was a deadly earthquake in Italy. Deadly in the sense that 7 people died, and you think, well, when you think of how many people have died in other earthquakes, we take what happened in Japan because of the tsunami last March. But for the people in this tiny, small, sleepy town, which is famous for Parmesan cheese, it was very devastating. And since it's like walking in a history book, a lot of historical things, ruins, were really ruined. And now they're trying to piece things together. You had a church steeple that collapsed, and you had some cheese that actually will go bad to the tune of $85 million, maybe, is what they're pegging it at. And very odd to see because, you just see all these clock towers cut in half and that kind of thing. 6.0 on the Richter scale, 6.0. I don't know about you, but it seems to me that we're really having a lot of earthquakes around the world, aren't we? Doubt that that's going to be anything they're going to be talking about at the NATO summit. I think they'll be talking about a whole bunch of other things, but not earthquakes so much. I think it's pretty interesting and sad in many cases that there isn't a better way to predict what's happening with quakes, that you can't get to people sooner to try and save more people. It's like, for all of you that live in California, you know, it's a matter of maybe time before the big one hits. That's always what people talk about. Whoa, what's going to happen to San Andreas Fault? Is it going to be Northern California? Are we going to see Southern California fall into the ocean? And we've seen some really, really bad earthquakes over the years in California, but we haven't seen anything big lately. However, we've seen quakes in Chile. We've seen quakes, obviously, in Guam. They're such a ground zero for that. We've seen them now in Italy and a whole bunch of other places where it seems like we're seeing more of them anyway. Also, while you were sleeping, perhaps, or just not paying attention to what was going on, you were taking a break from all the noise. A lot of conversation over the chaos on the Hill, because we have a lame duck Congress, really. Since this is a big presidential year, and there are people that are fighting to get their jobs back in the Senate and in Congress, all of the attention is more, the focus is more on the election process than what's at hand. And what's at hand is the fact that we've got the debt ceiling crunch that's with us again, and a slew of other economic problems that have to be dealt with that are just being argued about but being pushed aside. And to me, that's scary, because we can't keep putting, as a nation, we can't keep putting Band-Aids over all of our economic woes. We are the taxpayers. We're footing the bill for this. We're footing the interest for this. Because remember, when we say we're further in debt and we're talking about $16 trillion, well, imagine the interest. We're paying the interest, basically. So we are really essentially like a person who's gone wild with credit cards, who is so far into credit card debt, there's just no way to possibly dig yourself out. And that's why you get credit card help, because you can't get ahead of the interest curve. You're just paying on that. And that's what we are. As a nation, we're stuck in that group. We are paying on it. We're just paying on it. That's what's happening. Coming up on the flip side, a couple of great guests, including a guy who's going to tell you all about what is happening with some Islamic websites and how real the threats are and what are things to worry about. What are the things that are being said about the West, particularly about the United States? Are there serious threats out there, or is it more stirring the pot and whipping people in the Islamic world into a frenzy over Western ways? And there's, you'd be surprised at, one, how many websites there are, but you'd be surprised at what's really being said. What are the things that are being said on these sites that you'll hear about just vaguely? This is a in-depth study that I think you'll find incredibly fascinating. I couldn't believe some of the statistics that I read, and we'll share them with you next, as often we focus on what this elusive thing called terrorism and how much is this social networking part of this. You'll find out next with us here on America Tonight.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TERRAGANIX.com, Terraganics.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM1, the raw probiotic.
Hi, Jason Lewis here. Anybody who's been listening to my program knows how shaky the U.S. economy is right now. Will we have a V-shaped recovery, or will it be a W-shaped one where the nation slips back into recession? Of course, if you think that Washington can spend or inflate its way out of a downturn, you've got nothing to worry about. But as you know, I have my doubts. So let me tell you about gold. Now, as my friend Ted Anderson from Midas Resources likes to say, gold, like all commodity markets, fluctuates in price, and you could lose money. But it has never been worth zero. Give it some thought, and if you're interested in converting your IRA to gold, or would like to actually have it in your possession, call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237. The U.S. dollar was once backed by gold, but has since lost 90% of its value. And if things don't change, I'm afraid the trend will continue. Call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237 for gold and tell them Jason Lewis sent you.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dry guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dry guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus meat eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze-dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Well, we've been talking about the documents, the Osama bin Laden documents being released, 17 in all by the CTC, and some of what was in these documents we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. So it's been just over a year since the death of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. So what's happened? What's different? What's going on? Very pleased to welcome to the show Craig Charney. Charney has a New York-based international polling firm. You know, I'm the queen of polls. It specializes in crisis countries. It's so true. And emerging markets. Craig, you have no idea. You're being so welcomed here because it's really true. I am the queen of polls. I love what you guys do. I think it's so cool. So as we look back over a year, what's the biggest difference? What's changed in a year?
What we can see now is that the death of bin Laden was the end of what I call Al-Qaeda 1.0, but the start for Al-Qaeda 2.0. The old command and control system that centered on the guy with the beard hanging out by the Pakistani military academy is no more. But instead, what's become clear is that in a whole bunch of other places, like Yemen, Algeria, Somalia, and others, their affiliates, friends, and followers are nonetheless burrowing away.
So, and they're burrowing away. While that's going on, there has been a complete shift to other parts of the Middle East and to other parts a little bit further away from what used to be Ground Zero. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, it's important to note that they haven't lost all their followers, but they're down to a small-ish minority in places like Pakistan, where maybe one out of eight people is favorable to them, and maybe something similar in Afghanistan. Still, between 200 million people, that's a lot of folks, and they can cause a good deal of mischief. But the old idea of Al-Qaeda, remember, was not just to cause a lot of mischief in the middle of Asia. It was to be able to conduct spectacular attacks against the U.S. through a pretty complex command and control system. That's what's gotten smashed.
So as that's been smashed, what has stepped up in its place? What's now in place?
What you might call a franchise operation, a little like McDonald's. They let people use the name, and they give operational techniques and advice, only instead of Hamburger University, it's Bomb-Making University. And what we're seeing as a result is two things. One is more violence happening in a variety of places. Northern Nigeria, the takeover by some odd mixture of jihadists and tribalists in northern Mali, the struggles of the Shabab in Somalia, as well as a certain lingering sympathy in places like Libya and Egypt for certain elements of the jihad. And what we're also seeing in terms of the attempts to attack the homeland have been sort of low-tech, much simpler things. People like Najib al-Azazi, the guy who was just testifying against his friend here in New York, who was trying to do a repeat of the London bus and subway bombings here just a couple of years ago for the 10th anniversary of 9/11, or the crotch bomber a couple of years back who was trying to set off a small bomb in his underwear.
Oh, yeah. So you think that that's going to continue to be the method of trying to attack the West is by using, as you said, bombs, those kind of clever bombs, that kind of stuff?
Lower tech, more modest technologies as opposed to the kind of huge spectacular that was arranged on 9/11 and that bin Laden kept trying to arrange, according to the documents, right up to the day of his death. I mean, he ends up sounding a little bit like Hitler in the mad days of the end of the Third Reich, where he was trying to order around non-existent armies and his aides were afraid to tell him that they weren't there. I mean, in the case of the Al-Qaeda documents, they're constantly having to explain to him, we can't do this, we can't do that, so-and-so's dead. But the fact that they can't conduct that kind of spectacular means that they're not an existential threat, but at the same time, it means that they can be something more than a nuisance and can cause real damage from time to time. You know, if they brought down one of those planes, for example.
Exactly. So as everything has shifted, and you mentioned you threw a few of the places out, of course, Somalia, Nigeria, you look at Yemen. Yemen is really the hot spot. But if it's the hot spot, and we know it's the hot spot, aren't a lot of our efforts to try to thwart al-Qaeda or the 1 in 8 or whoever it is that's being turned, isn't that the idea, is to get in there and infiltrate?
Well, Yemen, remember, is where the bin Ladens actually came from, and it's the place where they enjoyed the most sympathy in the Arab world, in fact. It's also a very badly misgoverned place. What we have seen in the last few months is the end of an old regime which had really outlasted its tolerance in terms of the Yemeni people. And now there's an attempt at a transition towards something that will be more tolerable. I'm not sure if I can necessarily say much more democratic, but at least more tolerable to the people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, in certain parts of the country where the state's grip is weakened, a couple of provinces in particular, the al-Qaeda people are trying to make these their own.
Yeah. So they're trying to win them over in a much different way. But, of course, as you've done work in Afghanistan, big difference between Afghanistan, Pakistan and Yemen. What are the biggest differences? And let me explain that a little bit further. From what I understand, the toughest thing about Afghanistan is the illiteracy rate is so high, and the information most of the people get is through their visits to the local mosque. They don't really have televisions. Like when we apologize for certain things that have happened, television isn't widespread. Maybe in your more modern areas, for lack of a better way to say that. But isn't it true that it's still a big difference in the communication methods, and hasn't this been a big problem of the gap that the United States has had trying to cover this?
Well, radio is the key communications medium in Afghanistan, actually. 70% of Afghans listen to the radio at least 3 or 4 times a week, and interestingly enough, the Voice of America and BBC have its largest audiences in Afghanistan.
Mm.
That said, however, Taliban support tends to concentrate in the other 20 or 30%, the people who are not listening to the radio, the people who are not on the grid and who are getting their information from their friendly neighborhood mullah or Taliban leader. So there is some truth to that. Of course, even in a place like Yemen, the media war is also going on. The biggest difference between Afghanistan and these other countries is twofold. First, that Afghanistan was ruled before by the Taliban, which left a very bad taste in the mouths of most Afghans. And second, it's been the host, willing or unwilling, of 150,000 foreign troops. And that, in many Afghans' eyes, has also been a problem. There were particular problems in 06 and 07 when the civilian casualty rate was very high. And even though we brought it down, you know, there is a certain amount of resentment at both cultural incidents like the various Quran desecration allegations and also the presence of a large number of foreigners who are not Muslim. That's why in places like Yemen, what we've tried to do is to work with local security forces and develop the strength for counterinsurgency, while at the same time engaging in, well, you can't really call a Hellfire missile a surgical strike, but engaging in very specific pinpoint strikes for counterterrorism, like the attack that killed Anwar al-Awlaki.
Yeah. Craig, and I mentioned this at the top, of course, you specialize in international polling and crisis countries, emerging markets. Got to be fascinating stuff. What of the polls that you've done, and you've done them for you've done the polls for the government, international agencies, and NGOs, which I find so fascinating that you've been doing this for a decade. And when as you've seeing what happened initially in the beginning to where we are now, what's the thing that surprised you the most about the opinions in the Middle East of the United States? What are you getting? What's some of the information that you found just made you scratch your head?
Well, the biggest piece was the fact that people in the Middle East and Asia too often don't know what it is the U.S. is doing positively in their countries. When we read people in focus groups in places like Egypt, Morocco, and Indonesia, lists of all the U.S. aid projects in their countries, they nearly fell out of their chairs. They found them hard to believe. Some of them said, well, if all that were true, we'd be friends of America. But we've done, one of the things I really came to understand was what a bad job we've done in terms of public diplomacy and telling our own stories, and especially since the U.S. Information Agency was dismantled in 1996 at the behest of Jesse Helms. We sort of unilaterally disarmed in the war of ideas.
Yeah. Well, and see, this is what I would it's amazing you found that, and I would agree, because I've seen the same thing from people we have talked to in Afghanistan. What's not things that are done in villages, how they're getting water, how they're building roads. Some of that somehow gets lost in translation or just never filtered. It's never filtered down. So you're right. So there's not enough bragging.
There's a double paradox, and what we see is that Americans consistently overestimate our foreign aid, while foreigners consistently, their recipients consistently underestimate it. If you poll Americans, they tell you we're spending 40% of the budget on foreign aid. If you tell the ask the foreigners, they'll tell you next to nothing.
Yeah, boy, interesting stuff. Craig Charney, I know you had to hustle to get on the air with us. We appreciate that from Charney Research. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boost resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light system today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Did you know that gold and silver contain healing properties? It's true. Since the beginning of mankind's history, gold and silver have not only been used as real money, but also for healing our minds and bodies. UtopiaSilver.com is your leading source for colloidal silver and colloidal gold, offering supplement protocols that can heal and enhance your health. Protocols for boosting the immune system, insomnia, yeast infections, herpes, and countering the effects of vaccinations and radiation poisoning. And now UtopiaSilver.com encourages the use of real money with this buy one, get one free real money special. For details on your colloidal silver and colloidal gold supplements, call 888-213-4338 and ask about 50% off for first-time customers. That's 888-213-4338 or visit UtopiaSilver.com, UtopiaSilver.com, fighting for liberty and healing one American at a time.
Welcome back to America Tonight. As you know, when the Supreme Court was hearing the oral arguments about Obamacare, we were there in Washington, D.C. It's always a pleasure to welcome to the show somebody with armed with facts and, frankly, some great opinions on the situation with health care and a few other things about reelecting President Obama. Dennis Wolf joins us again. He's a health care claims consultant and a whole lot more. Hey, Dennis, how are you?
Great. I'm doing well. Thank you, Kate. How about you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. Hey, so I mentioned the thing about the Supreme Court arguments. What do you think, and I know you're up on this and you read everything and all that, what do you think is going to happen? Are the Supremes going to vote to strike it down, the individual mandate, and maybe the whole thing falls apart? Or do you think it stands?
Well, the short answer is I think they have no choice but to strike down the mandate, and I believe that Justice Breyer, who is typically one of the four on the left, will actually look at this from the perspective of the 10th Amendment, the Commerce Clause, everything, and he'll have no choice but to vote to strike down the mandate. So I think you're going to see a 6-3 vote to strike down the mandate. I think you're going to see a 5-4 vote to strike down the entire legislation with Breyer going back to the left side again. But I do believe this, and one of the reasons why is because Justice Kennedy made an interesting quote that has somehow missed the media, and he has said that he will not resign until President Obama leaves office. So there's obviously some ill winds blowing there for the president.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. And so for people who would counteract that and say, oh, but Dennis, that's a terrible thing. Healthcare was on its way up to a much better position for people, people being able to afford it with more opportunities. I say we've shown that that's not really the case. You're in the biz. What would you tell people?
Well, first of all, 25 years ago when I wrote my book on healthcare cost delivery reform, not healthcare reform, I made it very clear that the insurance companies were going to have to take a subservient role in the process of who's the primary payer. any type of healthcare cost delivery reform is going to have to look at all of the mechanisms in play, both in the delivery and in the cost side. Obamacare does absolutely none of that. It is nothing more than a confiscatory tax increase vehicle that will essentially take us out of being able to buy our own health insurance, and worse than that, being able to absolutely get any care at all once rationing is forced to kick in. All we are doing, Kate, is changing a multitude of insurance carriers for one insurance carrier, the entire United States government. And we all know how much money the government has.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that part of the problem that we're talking about?
Yeah.
And you know, it's interesting that, as you say, your book was so ahead of its time. Now we see, though, that the IRS, I just talked to someone the other day, and I think this is pretty well known, but they already have hired people, Dennis, and they're working with people to fill these positions to go after the folks who decide, I can't afford it, I'm not going to get their health care, I'm not going to get any kind of health care, so that they could suffer being fined. So we're the right people we're training.
Exactly. And again, it speaks to my point that this legislation had nothing to do with providing health care to people. It had to do with finding new significant ways to increase taxes and go after people who don't pay solely on the basis of using an intangible, often and most often misunderstood product, and that's the accessing of the health care system. What I'm really concerned about right now, and what I said of a few weeks ago, was that I think we are headed for the largest constitutional crisis this country's ever faced when the court actually strikes down this legislation. Obama's moving forward full speed ahead with the IRS funding. I believe it was $500 million, hiring new agents, 4,000 at this time. Although, let's not forget, the stimulus bill had within it 30 pages devoted to the high tech, which allowed for the creation of 16,000 agents. People forget about that stimulus bill, which was passed a few weeks after he was inaugurated for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
Then you couple that with the Department of Health and Human Services firing on all guns with Catherine Sebelius over there implementing every piece of regulatory legislation she can get. They want to layer this thing to the point where there's no way they can nullify it or reverse it once the Supreme Court strikes it down. Therein, you have a constitutional crisis.
Oh, boy. And Armageddon, really. That's what it is. That's what you're saying.
We're in a very dangerous time because what Obama just did yesterday was signed an executive order basically saying that we will now abide by international law. We don't have time on this show to talk about how NGOs function all over the world. I've attended conferences in the United Nations building in Geneva, and I've seen it firsthand. They lay the groundwork for international law, and this president seems to be focused like a laser on getting rid of our Supreme Court for lawmaking decisions. And you have to think, well, why is he pushing that right now? And then you say, well, let's connect just two dots. One, the Supreme Court's about to strike down his legislation. It's his signature's all over it, Obamacare. And two, if he can create, by executive order, a ruling that he isn't going to abide by the United States laws, but international laws, then he sets up a fiat where he says, okay, well, I don't care what you rule. I'm going by international law. All countries provide health care to their citizens. That's putting us right over the cliff if this happens.
Yeah, boy, no kidding. And people are missing that, I think, somehow. There's something that you say. You sent me a little piece that I thought was terrific, and that's why we're having this conversation.
Sure.
And in your piece, you say, individually and collectively, and we talk about this all the time on America Tonight, you demand from your communities across America that presidential candidate Mitt Romney be the leader that is required of the office he seeks. So people will say that. Yes. People will say, well, I'm not going to vote because Romney's not really the guy. He's not going to get elected. And so you say you have to get out there and do something about it.
We have to put pressure on him to, quote unquote, grow into the person that can hold the office that he seeks. He presently is waffling all over the place. I've heard him actually speak, and I know everybody who listens to some of these things will hear it too, where he goes, well, I'm not going to call Obama socialist, but blah, blah, blah. And then he turns around and says, well, he follows a lot of the European direction. Okay, fine. Then he turns around and he berates the European processes as rampantly socialistic. And I go, well, if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. And yet he will not do it. We're seeing the reincarnation of the John McCain campaign, and it's going to destroy this candidate's opportunity to save this country. And we desperately need to get Obama out of office.
Yeah, why is it? You think that they just don't want to go there? They don't want to go on the attack too much because they don't want to be labeled, or they're afraid what they'll alienate some of the Republican Party?
I wished I had the answer to that. Sometimes I think it causes me to wonder whether the Republicans are Democrat light and the Democrats are Republican heavy. I don't even know anymore which party. I switched my party affiliation to independent because I'm so frustrated with both parties. Whether or not they'll get this is something I don't know. We haven't had a solid candidate running for president, really, since President George W. Bush. People like him or hate him, it's not relevant. The fact is he campaigned hard and stood his ground on what he stood for. We're in deep water right now, and it's uncharted, and I think that Benjamin Franklin probably said it best, Kate, when he came out of the Constitutional Convention. I'm going to paraphrase it. Please forgive me for not knowing the exact words. The reporters asked him, the media asked him, and says, well, what did you do in there? They said, well, we gave the citizens a country. Now it's up to them to see if they can keep it. And we're there right now.
And it is about the people, and there is power in people and power in numbers, as you say. And I think more people need to realize that they do have a say, that they do have a stake in this. And so much of what's happening, if we continue down this road, and you brush on this too, you talk about this, it's not about a popularity contest. There's a misnomer there.
I was a Democrat when I first registered to vote. I still deeply admire Harry Truman because of the leadership he gave to the office. I'm a great admirer of Ronald Reagan. And to some degree, people believe it or not, I actually found some good parts of Bill Clinton. I think we've had some good leaders. What bothers me right now is we're not getting those kind of people that are rising up. It's all about money and power.
Yeah, and then unfortunately, what are they controlled by, and who do you have to answer to in that case? What do you think we're going to see, Dennis, numbers of people turning out? You think it's going to be a pathetic turnout for the election?
Well, I'm going to surprise you on this. There was a generation ago, 40 years ago, in fact it was 40 years this year, 40 years ago, in 1972, a man got reelected, and we all knew who that was, for those that are historically aware, Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And how did he get that re-election? Do you remember? I'll answer it for you. It was the Nixon silent majority. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I believe that generation, which is now in its 70s and 80s, that rose up, are going to rise up one more time. I think you're going to see a landslide against Obama, and it'll be that generation's last hurrah for actively voting and saying, okay, we're done. We're not going to let this happen again. Now, the problem I'm concerned about is that Obama's not a fool. If there's anything he has an unbelievably well-oiled machine. If his internal polls see that he's that dangerously close to losing, he has the power of the presidency to declare an international crisis, a national crisis. We have no idea what this man is capable of, and it's up to every American to remain diligent and demand that he be the ethical person he purported to be when he first ran in 2008.
Wow. I love that. The silent majority, if it is the last hurrah, then forget about the youth vote. It's really about the older vote.
That's right. The youth vote is irrelevant.
Yeah, I agree with you. A lot is made about that, but it was relevant in 2008 for Obama, but it's not relevant in this one. Absolutely,
no. Absolutely.
Dennis Wolfe, always terrific to talk to you. If somebody wants to get a copy of your book, how can they do that?
I will give away free copies. It's never about selling the book. It's about educating the people. All they have to do is email me at jdwolfe, jdwolfe@jdwolfe.com, jdwolfe@jdwolfe.com. I'll even cover the postage. I just, people need to wake up in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. Amen. Hey, thanks, Dennis. Take care, and thanks so much for coming on. Have you ever ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what Pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info, or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256, or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
A healthy heart starts with Extendovite. I've always believed that I had to have a strong defense to overcome the new superbugs of today. Extendovite, a 7-herb heart protection cocktail, not only helped me to overcome a massive heart attack, but it also has built up my natural immune defenses against colds and flus. Extendovite has so many benefits that we all should be taking Extendivite to build up our defenses for what superbugs might emerge yet. So start today, clean out the toxins, and be as healthy as you can be. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
In case you missed it, a recap from the trifecta challenge we had. Sorry, Sharon in Kentucky, Bill in Missouri, Rick in Illinois, Mike in Kentucky, Dave in Vermont, and the rest of you who participated in our Preakness trifecta challenge. We did not have a winner. We had to pick three horses, and nobody got it right. I'll have another wins the race, Bodemeister. Comes in second again with a chance to make history by winning the third leg of the Triple Crown. That would be for the Belmont. Trust me, before the Belmont, we'll be doing a show. And on that Friday morning in the third hour, you have a chance to clean out our prize closet with our last trifecta challenge, win, place, and show. You just have to give us the numbers. You don't even have to know anything about horse racing. It's just like picking lottery numbers. Oh, if it were so easy to pick those lottery numbers. That Powerball was up to something like 100 million. I was at a festival, and people were walking around with buttons that said 100 million. And I finally said to someone, what, 100 million, what does that mean? Because I didn't see the lottery thing. It's the lottery. It's the Powerball, 100 million. I said to the guy, what do you think? I have a better chance of getting struck by lightning or winning the 100 million? He said, somebody has to win. Somebody has to lose, too. And I'll tell you, this Rutgers story, we talked a lot about this. Dharan Ravi, the 20-year-old who was convicted of hate crimes in the web Ham spying case now faces the possibility of deportation in addition to the years in prison when he is sentenced on Monday. This is a huge deal that we'll be talking about for sure come our Tuesday show, our Monday, tail end of Monday, Tuesday show, because this was the guy at Rutgers who had the roommate who was gay, and he was kind of picking on him and doing this webcam thing, telling some of his friends to watch this webcam, and for hate crimes, and using this for hate crimes, it really sets a precedent for what something could be described as when it comes to a hate crime in the future, I think, because these jurors found him guilty on several counts of what they were calling bias intimidation, which is a hate crime, in addition to invasion of privacy and hindering his police investigation after determining that he was motivated by a dislike of homosexuals, they said, when he streamed the encounter between his roommate and an older man on the internet. And what happened was Tyler Clemente committed suicide by jumping off the George Washington Bridge after learning of the spying. And Robbie wasn't charged over his death, because how could you pin the death on him? You can't control what an individual's reaction would be. But the hate crime thing is very big in terms of what that means in the future for what people could be tried under. So he was born in India. He could be deported over this conviction, because guess what? He never completed his requirements to get his U.S. citizenship, even though he spent most of his life in the United States. So now they've got a couple of different grounds to deport him for: the committing a crime of moral turpitude or aggravated felony. And I don't know if this is just kind of one of those things. Will he be booted or not? Because a court might view, they say, a hate crime is simply a sentencing for an underlying crime and blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is, what's he going to be sentenced to? Does he get deported? So two different things here, two different things and two different possible outcomes of this. And here's the thing. He was convicted on the intimidation thing and spying on two different days. But the other thing that was so big is tampering with evidence, that kind of stuff. That's what could cause him to be actually deported in the end. So that could be really Ravi's undoing. But I think we're going to find that more people under this umbrella of hate crime will be convicted of a hate crime. And in one way, it could be good. In another way, it can be very, very bad. Because think of the definition of what you could stretch this to mean. And for bad behavior, poor choices, what somebody could try to get somebody for, what could ultimately be used in court for hate crime. So I think that it's scary in one sense. It's terrible what happened there. It should not have happened, and they should have nailed him for something. But now with the hate crime definition, I mean, and what he's guilty of doing and how far, you know, Clemente took it and what is he sentenced to, huge, huge implications. Giving new meaning to what it's like to on Father's Day. Can you imagine the father of 30 kids by 11 women? 30 kids. Boy, he was a busy guy, huh? And apparently he can't pay all this child support. So what women is he actually hooked up with? In looking at the story, he's only 33 years old. He's begging the state to help him to pay for his child support. He's saying he earns minimum wage. He made national headlines a couple of years ago when the amount of kids was 21 at the time. He said, I had 4 kids in the same year twice. He said the mothers of his children are supposed to get anywhere from 25 to a month to 309 a month to help raise the kids. The state takes half of his paycheck to divide among the mothers of his children. But now He's petitioning the state because he can't do this. His name is Desmond Hatchett, 33 years old. Oh, I can think of the jokes. Guys, how would you like to have 30 children with 11 different women? And he can still father some more kids. By the time he's done, who knows, he could get up to 50. So the kids are anywhere from toddlers to 14 years old. Oh, 14 years old. He makes minimum wage. So if the state is paying, which, you know, the state is going to have to pay for some of this, that means the taxpayers are paying. Desmond Hatchett, I would have to think, is not, he might be popular on Father's Day, but he's not popular with the people from the state of Tennessee. I doubt it. I don't think so. Wow. That many children. Like the old woman in the shoe, but he's not with the women. So it makes it that much more difficult. It makes it very difficult if you think about it, because there's no joint income there, obviously. And like I said, Father's Day is coming up in less than a month. Less than a month. He may end up getting a bunch of cards. I don't know. It depends on the relationship. But if everyone's beating his door in for child support, I would assume his relationship is kind of iffy with these women. So, wow. I'm still wrapping my head around the idea of what the people of Tennessee would think of this and how they would be shaking their heads over what he's done and how many women he's hooked up with and how he finds himself in this position. I mean, completely irresponsible. And what kind of women are hooking up with him when they know his past? Oh, I fathered 21 kids. Great. How about fathering a few more? He's a one-man wrecking crew when it comes to what the state has to dole out welfare-wise, because these women must run in the same circles, and you figure at the grocery store they must be comparing notes, perhaps, and maybe that's why he's in this situation, because some of them probably got their child support and others did not. What about the person who gets $25? $25 a month for child support? How far does $25 go for a kid? A lot of you have children out there, you know, $25, imagine you have a toddler. What does that buy? A couple of things of diapers, maybe a little bit of food, and then you're done, and that's a couple of days. What about the rest of the month? Oh, my. Any thoughts on the show, you can send them to me at americatonight.net.
Why wouldn't I want to be here? This is fantastic. This is great.
What, are you kidding me? Idiot! It's simple!
Can you repeat the part of this stuff where you said all about things?